from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sports Radio 610, Houston Texans breaking news.
All right, this came down during headlines, 6:52 a.m., so 10 minutes ago. Ian Rappaport with this one. The Texans have agreed to terms on a one-year extension with backup quarterback Davis Mills. The extension is worth $5 million in new money. So this is for 2025. There are also incentives based on playing time, which if C.J. Stroud remains healthy, he will see none. But nevertheless, if he does get in there, then he'll pick up, you know, $5 million is the floor for this right now. He can pick up some more scratch if and when he plays games. So he's now under contract through, Davis Mills is, through next year. It's interesting, Seth. I had a listener to my podcast, the Utopia Football Podcast. I do a mailbag every week. And I actually had a listener ask this question a week or two ago saying, would you give Davis Mills a one-year... Like, who says no, Davis Mills or the Texans, to extending Davis Mills? The number they threw out there was 1 year, $8 million. So it's significantly more than he actually signed for. And my answer to it was, I think Mills would say no. Because I would think Davis Mills hitting free agency after this season, based solely on the fact that he does have experience, you know, he started a bunch of games, he's been in this system now for 2 years, he does have talent, and as many teams that are running this system, I thought at the very least he would get a multi-year high-level backup deal on the open market.
I think this is a really good deal for the Texans.
I do too.
In a lot of ways. I think that I'm always torn on discussing whether it's a good deal for the player or not, because I would be an awful agent because there's a huge part of me that tries to tell young guys to keep things in perspective and recognize, all right, that first big extension, you know, obviously get as much as you can or what have you. But I always tell guys, have a number in your head of like, okay, what kind of guaranteed income will I have for life if I get to $5 million in savings or $10 million in my investment portfolio, whatever it might be? So you got to balance that out in terms of, like, let's not get too greedy about all this stuff. So Davis Mills, by the end of this year, he'll have made about $5 million. So, like, okay. let's say realistically, if he was really good and smart, didn't spend too much, after taxes, et cetera, let's say he's got $3 million in the bank. I don't know, maybe his number is I wanted to be sure I got $5 million before I get greedy about anything else. Then he could totally do that with this 1 year extension. And I think for him, and how does he get the best contract possible if he hits free agency? I think him playing in this system with this offense with these receivers is probably his best bet. So he might have looked at it as, all right, I don't know what I'll get if I'm a free agent this year, especially if I don't play at all. But sometime over the next 2 years, there's a good chance that I'm going to come in for C.J. Stroud if he's injured for 2 or 3 games. And it'll be in a system with really good weaponry around me, and I think I've got a chance of playing really well. So I'll get to, I'm making really good money if I keep things in perspective, and also I've got my chance to play the best football so that if I hit free agency in 2026, you could end up getting a way more money than most Texans fans probably think he should, except the reality of the situation is if he plays well, then there's teams out there that are going to give him a good chunk of money.
I agree.
Not even as their... But possibly as a bridge quarterback for their draft pick or whatever. A team like the Vikings this year.
Yep.
What are they paying Sam Darnold?
$10 million.
$10 million for Sam Darnold.
And he's better than, I'm telling you right now, Davis Mills is better than Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold sucks.
You could feel better about him coming in and putting in a winning effort than, and now, not other teams. Other teams might not feel that way. But I think he's... Davis Mills is probably looking at that and thinking, man, you know what? Sam Darnold actually played way better than people expected in the last part of the Panthers season a couple years ago.
Yep.
And he's making $10 million this year because of it.
Yeah. I think there's a couple interesting... I agree with everything you just said. I think that you're absolutely right. I think two other things about this, too, are really interesting. I think this could be a statement about the culture here that Davis Mills, as a backup, just really likes playing here. If he didn't like it in the building there, it would be very easy for Davis Mills to just go hit free agency. So I think it says a lot about Bobby Slowick, Jerod Johnson, D'Amico Ryans, a lot about C.J. Stroud probably, that you're voluntarily saying, I still want to stay here and back up C.J. Stroud. I think it says a lot about all those guys. And I think it's really interesting that this is an organization that just last season had Davis Mills slotted as the backup quarterback all year long until the week that they actually needed a backup quarterback, and they put Case Keenum in instead of him. You know, I think it says a lot about both sides that they feel Davis has grown to the point now where there's none of this is it Case or is it Davis conversation. Nick Caserio said that in a press conference a week or so ago, like, Davis is our backup, he's not going anywhere. No, he said it to John Harris in the pregame interview that Johnny does before one of the preseason games. He said that about Davis, and that Davis now looks at it and says, you know, I want to be the backup here. Like, they just week 15 last year, they yoinked the rug out from underneath Davis Mills, you know?
Yeah, I think that, man, time in system matters a lot. I always like the analogy of if you look at pilots, like fighter pilots, like time in a specific aircraft really matters. So you might be the best fighter pilot. You might be Chuck Yeager. But if all of a sudden you plop Chuck Yeager down in an aircraft that he's never flown before, there's a lot of pilots who are better than him than just because they've got time in that system. And I think Davis probably feels that and understands that. And he knows that this is a system that a lot of teams run, or systems very similar to this. And the better he can get and really command this to where people look at him as, all right, well, this guy's plug and play, then that's probably better for him. So I think it's a little bit of a hedge for them. I think for the Texans, it's a really good move.
Yeah.
For all those same reasons about time and system and everything else, I think they saw a leap in the way he operates the system from last year to this year, and they can just feel comfortable about him, that he's a young, healthy guy that can come in and run the system if CJ goes down.
Yep.
So this is a both sides win scenario, except I totally get it and understand if you're an agent or anybody else. I think maybe a lot of other players might be looking at it with a side eye, like, man, I don't know, dude, you really could have cashed in pretty well as a free agent.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think clearly if the decision were, if you were to ask Davis Mills like what your criteria was, and his first criteria was maximizing how much he can make from doing something like this, I would say you misfired, because I think you would have made more money just going and hitting the open market after this year. But clearly there's more at play than that for Davis Mills, I think. You know?
Yeah, I think a little bit of it. I also think of, it's one of those moves where sometimes, all right, it's a short-term loss, but for a long-term gain. Think about when Bill O'Brien was the offensive coordinator at Duke, and it was making, he's probably making $500,000 a year or so as an FBS OC. He took a drastic pay cut to go be basically a glorified quality control guy with the Patriots.
That's right.
Just because he wanted to learn. He wanted to be in that system and learn and everything. And he saw what happens to coaches from that system.
Yep.
And that was a really smart move for Bill O'Brien, I think, professionally and also monetarily. That paid off really big with him within a few years. that this feels like that. It's Davis Mills isn't moving or taking a lower paying job or anything, but he's staying kind of in the incubator a little bit longer.
Yeah.
He just wants like a prize fighter that's not quite ready for that championship fight. You want to just keep him and hold him in reserve and keep working on him. He might have an opportunity for a championship fight, but his trainer knows that he's not quite ready yet.
A lot of people on the text page saying that Mills could go wherever Bobby Slowick ends up going to go start for him someday. Now, if that were the case, though, he's going to still be under contract to the Texans in Bobby Slowick's first year somewhere.
Yes, and that's why this is also, thank you, a really good move for the Texans. Davis Mills, by the end of this season, if Davis Mills gets a chance to play a few games this season, and again, I know a lot of Texans fans, when we say stuff like that, are kind of like, oh, come on, it's Davis Mills. Matt Flynn, whomever, go down the gauntlet of guys that, based off a few games experience, end up getting good deals elsewhere.
Yes.
But likewise, guys who get traded. The old Titans quarterback that got traded three times. I'm mixing players.
Okay.
Not the Vikings quarterback. But, oh, damn it. Anyway, like guys get traded. And so the Texans.
Sam Bradford.
Thank you, Sam Bradford. So I think that it's a really good move for the Texans, both from a backup quarterback standpoint, and then also that they've got one more year of control of Davis Mills, and they might get a nice trade. And maybe Bobby Slowick, if he goes to a situation where he doesn't feel awesome about the situation, he might put in a strong endorsement for Davis Mills. If they, even a team with like a mid first round draft pick or something that they're going to use on a quarterback, that Davis Mills makes a lot of sense as a bridge quarterback.
Absolutely. Or as a bridge quarterback, as if they're drafting a young guy, like you just said, as a guy who can provide some mentorship like Case Keenum did for CJ Stroud last year and this year. If you're just getting in your car, you're just waking up. The Texans have extended Davis Mills for one more year. So he's under contract through 2025. $5 million is the number.
If you're a Falcons fan right now, would you rather they have traded for Davis Mills and paid him $1 million this year and then drafted Michael Penix? Or do you like the situation where they're paying Kirk Cousins a boatload
of
money?
That's an interesting one because the... if it were almost any other division, a team in any other division, I would say that what you just said makes a lot of sense. But they're in a bad division. Like Kirk Cousins, as sideways as they may get with Kirk Cousins over drafting Michael Penix, Kirk Cousins easily makes them the best team in that division right now.
It's a bad example for me to use because, and also as a fan, I'm not too carried about, I'm not too concerned about salary cap ramifications down the road. All right, load up on as much talent as possible.
Yeah.
So that it makes sense for them.
Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's see, text messages coming in on this, and then we'll get to the Texans, to D'Amico Ryan's on the Colts. I disagree, man. I think Darnold may actually be better than Mills. Mills sucks too, LOL.
The $10 million that Sam Darnold is making is the... I can't be in the position of paying Sam Darnold $10 million.
I can't be in the position of having to look at his face every day. Hey, man, we'll find out in week 3. Sam Darnold will be starting for the Vikings against the Texans.
Yeah. Bookmark this segment. We might have a bunch of told you so's if the Texans don't win that game.
Middle Screen is taking a victory lap right now on the text page. Coach Middle Screen told you all the day he was drafted, Mills was a second contract guy. I need to go back through your texts, Middle Screen.
Plus this is technically a second contract, But this is good for the Texans.
Yeah.
It's very, very low risk. Look, they just cut Noah Brown, who had $3 million guaranteed.
Yep.
They're going to make moves when it gets to the $3 to $5 million range. I'm guessing that this is a heavily guaranteed contract. I haven't seen the details of it yet for Davis Mills.
Yeah.
But it gives them, if for whatever reason they found somebody else that they like better than Davis Mills, this doesn't prevent them from moving to that guy as the backup quarterback or what have you. I don't think it prevents them from drafting a quarterback as a potential replacement.
No, man.
It's a smart move by the Texans.
You're in a Super Bowl window and you've secured your backup quarterback at a very reasonable price for the next 2 years. So you're good.
And he's a potential trade piece.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I like that. All right, D'Amico Ryans. Anthony Richardson is the foe this week under center. Here's D'Amico Ryans earlier this week on the threat that Anthony Richardson poses the Texans.
It's been a really great matchup for us to start off the year. Anthony Richardson, as he showed with the limited amount of snaps that he's had, he's shown that he can be a dynamic playmaker, you know, running the ball, also throwing the football. So he's a playmaker, right? You have to account for him every single snap just because of his dynamic ability, right, to run the football. So he poses a really good challenge for us defensively, and we definitely have our hands full.
As we saw in week two last season, what's been the biggest change, you think, Seth, for the Texans compared to week two last year where Anthony Richardson, while he was in the game, was running roughshod over them?
Okay, so last year I went back and I watched the first couple of touchdown drives by Anthony Richardson, both of which culminated in 20-plus yard runs in which he was virtually untouched. I will say, I think MJ Stewart hit him after he was already across the goal line on that second touchdown. It did knock him out of the game.
That's who hit him. I couldn't remember who knocked him out.
Yeah. But when I go back and watch those two runs, Henry Toa was a little bit slow to recognize QB draw. The blocking on that play, I think this year's version of Henry Toa would have attacked it a lot faster than he did. And it might have made – I know it – it looked on replay like he was like Anthony Richardson just had, like, there was nobody in position. I think if Henry Toa had played that a little bit more aggressively, he and Jonathan Gennard could have gotten a good look on Anthony Richardson. Still would have been a positive gain. Then likewise, on the second touchdown run Anthony Richardson had, Will Anderson bit hard.
Oh, he did. Yeah, I remember that now.
Anthony Richardson was about 40 yards away from him. That's an exaggeration, but by the time Will realized that he'd blown contain, Anthony Richardson was almost in the end zone. So I think those two things are different this year. Will got duped a couple times on plays like that early in the season and got smarter as the season went along. But then also, a couple of the throws, one play in particular. There was a play where I think it was Granson, the tight end, was wide open over the middle. And Denzel Perryman, the linebacker, where this year would be Alshire, just completely whiffed on the coverage. Just didn't pick up the tight end at all. Had his eyes in the backfield. Probably had some kind of spy duties on Anthony Richardson. And he let him run wide open. There were a few linebacking plays in that game that I think Alshire is a vast improvement over Denzel Perryman. It's hard for me to say that because I admire Denzel Perryman's constant willingness to lacerate a kidney in the run game.
Yeah.
But he wasn't always dialed in on his pass coverage responsibilities.
Yep.
So that alone, I think, is going to be a big difference. It's not like Anthony Richardson ran for 40-plus yards and two touchdowns every single quarter that he played last year.
Right.
That was particularly bad by the Texans defense in that. And they're a smarter defense this year.
All right, here's D'Amico Ryans. I would say one of the other big threats against the Texans this weekend is Jonathan Taylor. He had a nice game in Week 18 against them last year. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the Colts running back.
Yeah, Jonathan, I think he's a successful running back just because he runs with such great contact balance. Like, it takes more than one guy to get him down. He does a really good job breaking tackles. He plays physical. He plays downhill. He runs the ball, plays the game the right way. I think that's what makes him a really good running back.
Yep. The one thing about Jonathan Taylor is that he's lethal in a lot of ways that was a huge weakness for the Texans last year. The Colts run a lot of RPOs. They're like a top five RPO team, and that's with Gardner Minshew as their quarterback last year. And the Texans linebackers were really flat-footed in reacting and responding to the RPO. So there's a lot of times where, Jonathan Taylor was hitting the line of scrimmage on these options with nobody in front of him for 5 yards. So even when he was getting tackled, the Texans linebackers were getting dragged behind him. They can't play that way this year. I hope Alshire makes a huge difference in that regard. So, he's gonna get his yardage. I don't think you can worry about trying to shut him down or anything. I don't need them to do that to win this game. But he was the Texans gave him his largest production game last year in the regular season.
Yeah.
188 yards rushing in that game. But they had their troubles against Zach Moss too. It's not even as much about Jonathan Taylor as just the Colts run game in general.
Yep. Let's flip it over to the other side of the ball. We know that the Colts have a couple of linebackers that are going to be very ready for this game to go against C.J. Stroud, E.J. Speed, and Zaire Franklin. We've heard all the trash talk from both sides. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the Colts linebacking core.
Yeah, E.J. and Zaire, they've done it for a while together. Right? They're long, athletic, fast guys who can make plays, sideline to sideline. So, we have to be able to get ahead on those guys because they make most of their plays once the ball gets past the defensive line. Those are the guys who you have to stop because, their speed, their length, their athleticism.
This is probably the matchup that's maybe most clickable just because there's so many sound bites of C.J. Stroud, E.J. Speed, and Zaire Franklin talking smack about each other in the offseason.
Yeah.
It turned into mostly, I think it's mostly been Zaire Franklin and C.J. at this point. EJ's actually been pretty complimentary in most of the things that he says about C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
Zaire's the one that's taken it on multiple different podcasts.
Right.
So Zaire Franklin versus C.J. Stroud dynamic and potential for smack talk. I think that's got a lot of people juiced up this week.
If this were like a WWE matchup, it would be C.J. Stroud versus Zaire Franklin, and Zaire Franklin has like E.J. Speed in his corner, standing outside the ring. You know what I mean?
It's really Speed's kind of like the reasonable dude that's he's in the mix, but he's gonna be faithful to Zaire, but he might not have his full heart in it.
Yeah, or he might. Maybe he turns on Zaire and hits him with a chair. You never know. But you're right. Zaire Franklin's been the one repping the Colts in this thing for most of the time.
Yeah, Zaire, he likes to think of himself as an old school linebacker. I think both those guys I'm more nervous about in the run game than in the pass game. So I look forward for – I hope CJ just takes the opportunity to kind of roast a couple of those guys. Not specifically because he wants to. Not because he's doing it just so he can roast them, but just by way of the way the game unfolding. There's a good chance that the Colts are going to be very fixated on the Texans' wide receivers, and CJ might feast over the middle.
He might.
And that would be fun.
That would be
a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Give me some highlights of those guys flailing around in coverage, please.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if Dalton Schultz gets chippy with these guys.
He does.
Dalton Schultz had some good back and forth and some kind of like mini shoving matches between him and those linebackers. Which would make it even better if it was Cade Stover that went off and Brevin Jordan.
Yeah.
If those guys, I would love for Brevin Jordan to be running free because those guys are so fixed on trying to lay a big hit on Dalton Schultz or something.
Can't wait. It's going to be so fun. Sunday, noon kick, by the way, right here on Sports Radio 610.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
One more from D'Amico. Here's D'Amico Ryans on trying to establish the run game.
Yeah, they have a really great front seven, starting with the two interior guys, you know, Buckner and Stewart. Those guys are a force inside. But it's not about if we have to run it, but whatever we have to do to move the football up and down the field. Like, it really doesn't matter if it's running the ball, throwing the ball, whatever it takes for us to be successful in moving the football, that's what we'll do.
Yes, that's what I like hearing. 45 pass attempts. Let's go.
Yeah.
Aerial circus. Let's do it.
We're going to establishing the run. That's I want nothing but propaganda that we're going to establish run. Talk right. A lot of smack on social media, Laramie.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, by the way,
they're front. Honestly, one of the matchups that's going to be really fun to watch and that I expect to go for really well for Laramie Tunsil is against Leatu Latu, the rookie, the first rounder defensive end that the Colts took. Everybody's very high on him right now. He had a productive preseason. The first preseason game was against the starters for the Broncos, and he had some nice plays there. But I think Laramie Tunsil is going to shut him down completely.
I
very much look forward to watching him really give Leatu Latu his lesson in actual NFL football, because everything that Latu is good at, he's not a ridiculously impressive athlete at all. It's very rare for somebody like Latu, somebody with Latu's athletic profile, to actually be a premier edge rusher. The difference with Latu is he's really good with his hands.
Yeah.
He's just got silky smooth technique. Like, maybe better than any pass rusher we've ever seen as a college kid coming into the NFL. And yet, that is precisely what Laramie Tunsil is better at than almost every other NFL defensive end. The hand fighting, the martial arts aspect of it, Laramie is awesome at that stuff. So I feel this will be a nice learning experience for the young Leatu Latu.
I hope that's the case. I just checked Laramie's social media to see if he's retweeted anything about Trent Williams' new deal. Did you see that? That Trent Williams ended his holdout yesterday?
Yeah.
After 40 days of waiting, the holdout for Trent Williams is over. The star left tackle agreed to a restructured 3-year $82.6 million deal. So that's a little under $30 million a year. It's about $28 million a year, thereabouts. $48 million at signing, $25 million signing bonus. We'll pay him a league-high $27.65 million for offensive linemen this season.
There was Grant Cohn, who covers the 49ers. He's a very successful YouTuber. He's almost like, in the old days, he would have been like the lead writer / columnist for a major newspaper.
They get chippy with him, the Niners.
Yeah. He's kind of he's not afraid to.
He's an agitator. Yeah.
He did say that he's reporting, and other people have backed this report up, that Jed York, the owner of the 49ers, is kind of upset about how much money the 49ers have spent this offseason in just trying to keep the same guys around.
Does he know what
it's
business?
It's not like they were making aggressive off-season spending or anything. But I don't take it for what it's worth. It's a report where you're hearing this through the telephone game and everything, that Jed York and the 49ers ownership is not pleased with management, or not pleased with the GM and the head coach right now,
because they've dished out so much. They signed Ayuk. They extended Ayuk. They extended McCaffrey. And now Trent Williams.
I don't know. This is one of those kinds of things where I could see this as totally Jed York being kind of like, all right, this is a lot of money we're spending just to keep the team together.
Yeah.
And you guys haven't won a Super Bowl yet. Versus that doesn't mean that he thinks that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are gone at the end of the season.
No, that would be silly.
If they don't win a Super Bowl. Yeah. I think it's what an owner should be doing. Like, hey, all right, this is getting a little bit crazy.
Well, Jerry Jones is learning it this offseason. The Texans are going to learn it soon, too. This is the curse of having really, really, really good players on your team.
It's the curse of
You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to... It's expensive. It's very expensive to keep a Super Bowl contending team together. And
it's expensive. I think the part that starts to chafe against the old guard, which I would include in myself, is, man, it just seems like it's becoming very standard for guys to be holding out and what have you when they've still got years remaining on their contract. Yeah. And that is, this isn't like the fallacy of the slippery slope. That it sets a precedent, and obviously that precedent is being followed a lot more lately. And you start to get nervous when guys, when all these guys start feeling like, well, listen, yeah, I know I've still got at least a year remaining on my contract, but I want that money now, and I'm going to withhold services.
Dude, I'm telling you, the Brock Purdy thing is going to be really interesting next year. If what Grant Cohn is reporting is true, especially, it was going to be interesting anyways, but if Jed York is starting to have, you know, the stomach pangs of dishing out all this money to guys, that's a quarterback contract they've still got to do. Like, the one of the reasons they're able to do all this stuff with Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, Nick Bosa, Trent Williams, and Christian McCaffrey, that's just five of them. I'm sure there's other kind. Fred Warner's got a big deal. Like, he's right. I mean, there are a lot of they have a lot of top-of-market guys because they are top-of-market players. They still got, they've got a quarterback who's getting paid Mr. Irrelevant money right now. Holy smokes.
And I just, you hope they don't succumb to like the Jerry Jones disease where you get deluded into thinking it's easy to go out and get a quarterback just because you got lucky with it. Now, Jerry has just gotten extremely lucky with it a few times.
Yeah.
Whereas the 49ers have seen up close and personal, boy, we spent a lot of money and draft picks on Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah. We spent a boatload of draft picks on Trey Lance. Yeah. It's not so simple to just go out and find a replacement for Brock Purdy or somebody else.
No, it's not. And yet they might be inclined to think that way just because of who their head coach is. You know, there are a lot of guys that Kyle Shanahan, they just happen to pick a couple of the wrong guys maybe, with Trey Lance for sure. Trey Lance just might not be good in any system. But they may look and go, okay, well, there probably are more guys that Kyle can coach up out there than the average head coach or OC can coach
and
up.
You know what, in Garoppolo, if you take injuries out of the equation with Garoppolo, they probably feel like on the football side of things, like, yeah, we got enough out of him to go to a Super Bowl. Garoppolo wasn't certainly, I wouldn't say he was the main reason they lost that Super Bowl, but just his inability to stay healthy is what did them in. So, yeah, their ability to find a guy that fits the system and can function really well in it, they're 2-for-3 in that regard.
Yeah. This is an interesting text. There will be a mass exodus of good players from the Niners that will end up joining the Texans. I mean, D'Amico is going to now be two seasons removed from being with the 49ers, so there's going to be fewer and fewer guys over the years that he's familiar with from being in the building with them. I do think it's interesting, though. I mean, Azeez Al-Shaair is a player like that. You know, it took an extra year for him to get here. He had to do an internship with the Titans for a year. But that's, I think that fits what this texter is talking about, which is, can't pay everybody. So there's, and the Niners draft well. They are good talent evaluators. There are going to be players who just never got a shot, or they just can't afford to pay, that might end up becoming Texans. That's interesting. Yeah, if you're a Texan fan, do your little Amazon.com browsing today on the 49ers roster and go look and see who you might want to go nab after this season or the next season.
The schools that you always want to look for when it comes to the Texans, or the feeder system is Alabama and perhaps the 49ers.
Those are the two. Yeah, those are the two.
Since Casario took over.
Yep.
It's been a whole lot of Alabama. That predates, I mean, well, I guess, including D'Amico. Let's just throw him into there as well.
That's right.
Even though he had nothing to do with Nick Saban, didn't play for Nick Saban or anything, I feel, I don't know. I like that Casario's go-to school is Alabama versus Bill Belichick's go-to was Rutgers. There's something about me that feels like, all right, Casario didn't pick some backwater school to make his feeder school the way that Belichick liked to do.
Bill Belichick's go-to is Group of Five and FCS, man. Like, that's he likes those small school dudes. Thoughts on the Texans, this is a text message. Thoughts on the Texans having a floor and ceiling record through the first 5 weeks of this. Ceiling 5-0, floor 3-2. Okay, so the first five games are at Indy, home for Chicago, at Minnesota, home for Jacksonville, home for Buffalo. A Buffalo team, of those five teams, Buffalo is probably thought to be the best team. They have the highest Super Bowl odds of those teams. You're not high on Buffalo. Who do you think's better, Indianapolis or Buffalo?
Oh, that's a great question. I like Indianapolis's overall roster.
Yeah.
But Josh Allen is, I think Josh Allen has challenges this year that I don't think he's as ready to overcome as, like, a guy was in Pat Mahomes when he lost Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Buffalo's still tougher for me. I'm not even trying to wish for this or anything, but I think there's a good chance Anthony Richardson is not playing football by the end of the season.
Yeah,
that's been his history.
Yep.
And he doesn't, in the preseason, he took hits that he didn't have to take.
Yeah.
I think when he got injured in the Texans game, that was a hit he didn't have to take.
That's right.
You know, like that was, so what's the question?
The question was, the floor and the ceiling for the first five games of the year. And this texter is saying, worst case, the Texans are going to be 3-2. Best case, they sweep the board and go 5-0 in those first five.
All right,
games.
Like realistically, yada yada yada. Any given Sunday, it's like don't underestimate your opponent.
Yeah.
I think it's really. I think that they win at least three of these games, unless there's an incredibly bad stroke of luck.
Yes,
and I feel really good about the Bears game. I feel really good about the Vikings game.
Yep.
I feel really good about the Jaguars game.
Yeah.
And I mean, not as guaranteed victories or anything. I would say my reasonable floor is three wins over that.
I'm with you. I agree with the texture. I agree with you. This is how I'm looking at the season, Seth. I'm looking at it in, there's three chunks to this season for me. The first eight games, those middle three games in weeks 9, 10, and 11 that are all primetime games, two of them on the road, and then the last six games. And I feel really comfortable in saying the Texans, I think, are going to go 6-2 in the first eight games. That's their easiest patch of schedule, the first half of the season. I think they go 6-2 in the first eight games. I think they go 3-3 in the last six games. You know, that's the patch that has the three games in 10 days against good teams. They go to Tennessee to close out the year. That won't be easy, even though I don't think Tennessee's very good. So I've looked at the schedule a jillion times. I think they go 6-2 in the first eight. 3-3 in the last six. I feel strongly about that. So those two patches of schedule add up to 9-5. This season is going to be decided by those three primetime games in the middle of the year. Jets on Halloween night, Thursday night. Detroit, who's one of the favorites in the NFC, at home on Sunday Night Football. And then the Cowboys game on Monday Night Football. I think that's the swing vote for this season. I think the first half of the season, I feel strongly. Last half of the season, I think they go 3-3. If they go 2-1 in those three primetime games, it's an 11-win team, which is my prediction for the season. I'm predicting 11-6. That's the patch of schedule that I think I don't have a strong feeling on how they're going to do, you know, in those primetime games. I just don't. But so that's sort of the swing vote for me right there, weeks 9, 10, and 11. So... Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. All right. Seth and I do this every year. Let's do this in the next segment. First coach to get fired. The odds are out. We do this every year. I don't know if we've nailed it on any of these. I'd have to go back and look. I think we've nailed it the last couple years, because the first 2 years we did it, it's the head coach death pool. Seth and I are each going to draft four NFL head coaches, and the goal is to try to have the one within our four who is the first one fired this year. Play along with us in your car. Coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
You know, it's funny. You tease a topic, and then 30 seconds later, you're onto something else in your mind. Because I'm looking at the text page, I'm like, why are people just texting in just names of coaches? Like, there's a text, Stefanski, Sean Payton. Like, there's all these texts. Oh, yeah, that's right. I teased our NFL head coach, first head coach fired death pool in the previous segment. So people are answering my question. It's one of those days, man. I was up late last night.
You're up late drafting fantasy.
Drafting my next 4-10 fantasy team. Yes.
It was important for you to, just forget your professional responsibilities.
So, well, there's a little crossover, I suppose. You know,
it is. Getting ready for a fantasy draft is actually one of the best ways to prepare for a football viewing season.
Absolutely.
A lot of times, you know, there's names out there. If you're not paying attention to fantasy, some of the guys who are performing well on underperforming football teams might escape your attention.
Indeed. So that was what I was doing last night. So let's do this, Seth. So the first head coach fired, the odds are out on the first head coach fired. So they do this every year.
Yeah.
The last four winners, we started doing this, I think, in 2020. when Bill O'Brien was the first head coach fired after an 0-4 start.
It's not my job.
It wasn't anywhere.
Had either of us picked him in that year?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we did. And then I don't think either of us had Urban Meyer in 2021.
Well, right, because it was his first year as a head coach. Yeah. It was Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
The only thing I felt comfortable predicting with Urban Meyer was that it was an extreme boom or bust. He was either going to be awesome or he was going to be atrocious.
You were right.
But I never could have foreseen just how bad it was. My first indication was when they came to play here. It was the first game of the season, right?
It was the opener again. It was David Culley's debut as Texans head coach.
I remember talking to some Jacksonville media members that I had known from back when I played there.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, so like a lot of this, some of the criticism of Urban Meyer seems like it's overblown. And they looked at me like, kind of like, like they could tell something was
okay.
Weird.
So they're around the team.
It was weird with Urban Meyer. Yeah.
And then the last two years, the first head coach fired has been the Carolina Panthers head coach. Matt Rhule in 2022. And Frank Reich last year, fired 10 games into the season. So
after losing his play calling or what? No. He gave up play calling. He took play calling duties and then gave him up and then took him back.
And then
whatever
took him
it
back,
was.
Yeah. When he got
it was the perfect environment for Bryce Young was all I know.
Yeah.
Just according to so many pundits, it was the perfect environment for Bryce Young.
Oh.
Who could have it better than a head coach who is notoriously awful? The offensive, this is one of the undersold stories about Frank Reich, was that he made those offensive linemen worse than they were. He actively made the offensive line worse as an offensive coordinator. But he was the best guy for a young 5'3" quarterback.
Let's pick here. You and I pick four coaches each year. We draft them, and I'm going to let you go first as to who we think the first head coach fired is going to be. So you're up. First pick is you, Seth.
I don't think I can go with Dave Canales. I really want to. I don't know.
You get four picks, Seth. You can make him one of yours.
I'm okay. All right. Right now, Nick Sirianni, he's the sixth highest on this board
for first guy to
be fired. But, man, he is sideways with the franchise quarterback who got paid. Doesn't really have a whole lot of excuses for why things looked as bad as they did in the back half of last season. Oh, Robert Saleh and Mike McCarthy are just sitting out there like big meatballs in front of them. I think with Sirianni, Sirianni's the one that might blow up fastest and most violently.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Nick Sirianni.
Nick Sirianni for your first pick. All right, I'm writing these down so we can revisit these later. I'll put them at the bottom of the rundown so we can refer back to it. So Seth takes Nick Sirianni, first head coach fired, as his first pick. I am going to go with somebody who's tied with Sirianni on the board and go with Todd Bowles of Tampa Bay. I'm going to go with Todd Bowles in a division now where they can't just win it because it's a bunch of crappy teams. Atlanta has seriously upgraded their roster, both at quarterback and on defensively, with getting Justin Simmons and Matthew Judon. And I think there's potential Cinderella pumpkin potential with Baker Mayfield, with Canales no longer there as the OC. And as Cowherd would say, defensive head coach loses his offensive coordinator. I think there may be something to that with this one. I'm going Bowles with my first pick. Tampa Bay.
All right. You got to work in the psychology of the owners with a lot of these things.
That's true, too. Yeah.
Tampa, even when they fired Bruce Arians, he wasn't really fired. When Bruce Arians, did he retire? What was the deal?
I don't remember.
Yeah, he remembered, but then he was back and he was on the sidelines and everything. Yeah. It was just all weird. He wasn't fired, but it was uncomfortable.
Who's your second pick?
I am going to go, Daboll is, man. It's not Daboll's fault that Daniel Jones is his quarterback.
No. Nope.
But I feel like Daboll's the kind of guy who just, he's not going to be able to hold in his rage over Daniel Jones being his quarterback. And Joe Shane, who basically tells the owner what to do there in New York, at least based on what I saw. It looked like he basically leads the owner around by the nose. Yeah.
Saquon.
I think Daniel Jones throws like 17 picks in the first three games, and Brian Daboll is blamed for it. I'll take Brian Daboll.
You're stealing that one from me, dude. That was my next pick. Just Daboll, every press conference I've watched and watching Hard Knocks, Dayball's acting like a guy who might want to get fired. You know, like, I do get the rest of my contract paid to me. Got his feet up on the table interviewing guys, and he's like...
It looked every bit, maybe this was intentional, but it looked like he was phoning it in on the entire draft process and free agency process.
Yes. Yeah.
He basically, it was almost like, at various times, coaches have said, like, I don't know, I watched some of them on YouTube.
Yep.
that was their scouting process.
It's unbelievable. All right, I am going to, for my next pick, Seth and I are drafting four head coaches with the goal being for us to capture the first one to get fired this season within our four. I'm going to go with Stefanski. Because it's fun to root against Deshaun Watson,
you can't fire
the quarterback who has $180 million of cap hit left on his deal.
They're in last-ditch effort mode with Deshaun Watson, and just like the Giants are trying to figure out what they have in the quarterback they already paid, the Browns are trying to figure out what they have in the quarterback that they already paid a record-breaking amount. And even if they believe Kevin Stefanski is the issue or not, they're going to have to say, like, well, all right, well, we got to try something.
Yeah.
So that, even if they might knowingly not feel like he's the issue and still have to get rid of him to try something different.
All right,
that's a good one by you.
Thank you.
Likewise, too, I guess I'm taking on kind of a victim complex here with a lot of these head coaches, because I think Robert Saleh has actually done a pretty good job given the circumstances over the last couple of years. But because he's so bad at handling unwinnable press conferences, he's in this situation in these press conferences where it's an unwinnable situation, but he somehow makes it worse.
Yes.
So I think Robert Saleh is the victim there if Aaron Rodgers isn't playing well, gets injured, or anything else. So I'm going to go with Robert
Saleh. That's a good pick. That's a really good pick. He's third on the odds board at 7-1. All right, I'm just going to go meat and potatoes here. Dennis Allen is the heavy favorite to be the first one fired in New Orleans, 3-1. I don't know that to be the case, but he's by far the one Vegas sees as the first one to get fired. I could see Derek Carr getting a coach fired for sure.
I'm just pissed off.
Yeah. been a while since we've been able to dust that one off. I'm going Dennis Allen for my third pick, Seth.
I'm going to go with one. I think that this guy's lower on the odds board than he probably should be, just because Buffalo is just so undercovered by the press. Mm-hmm. People just generally ignore it. I don't think Sean is somebody who has family up there. If Sean McDermott walks into a bar in Western New York, I'm not so sure anybody's buying him a beer. So,
really?
People have been giving the side eye for a long time. They don't hate him, but there's no love lost there, and I wonder how ownership feels about it. And again, defensive-minded coach where just feels like you haven't done or really captured all the potential that you've had on your roster. So I'm going to take Sean McDermott.
That's a good one. Was there ever a point, from talking to your peeps up there, was there ever a point where he was like the toast of the town? I mean, because Buffalo, I mean, he kind of got Buffalo out of the muck. They were bad for 20 years.
Oh, yeah, definitely as far as, I think. But now they've been good enough long enough now that the expectations have been raised. Yeah. The bar has been raised enough that I think there's a lot of, it's not like people actively dislike him, but it's the pressure of being a defensive-minded head coach when it looks like you can't surpass the best offense in the league.
Yep. A lot of people texting in Mike McCarthy for sure. It's going to be Mike McCarthy. I will point out two things. I don't know that the Cowboys are going to be bad enough for him to get fired. Again, we're trying to get the one who's the first head coach fired.
Yeah, the first head coach fired.
Right.
Jerry Jones notoriously just drags his feet on decisions. And Mike McCarthy might be the last one. I could both make an argument that he's most likely to get fired, but also that he'll be the last one fired. I think that Mike McCarthy, I don't...
I'm not taking McCarthy. Yeah. This is my last pick here. So Seth has taken Sirianni, Daboll, Robert Saleh, Sean McDermott. I have selected Todd Bowles, Kevin Stefanski, Dennis Allen. I love what you said earlier. A lot of people texting in maybe Eberflus. I'm not impressed by Eberflus, but I don't think he'll be the first one fired. Ownership, big in this. Mm-hmm. You pointed that out earlier, like taking a look at dysfunctional owners. And so my last pick, 12-1 on the odds board, Antonio Pierce. I feel like Antonio Pierce of the Raiders was like a sugar high higher. Like, he did some good things. I think the biggest thing Antonio Pierce had going for him is that he wasn't Josh McDaniels. And that's going to...
He was the exact opposite of Josh McDaniels in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
right?
And so the players really took to him. They put together some wins at the end of the year. They went 5-4 down the stretch. They got Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell as their two quarterbacks right now. And that Mark Davis is not a stable owner. There's a reason why they got so many votes on the unstable franchise list from all those agents that did the poll in The Athletic. So, Seth, I'm going with Antonio Pierce as my final pick. So I feel good about that.
I feel pretty good about this. Yeah. Have I ever won this in the past?
I don't know. I'll go back and look. I've got it somewhere. Okay. Yeah, I've got it somewhere. You might have had...
So obviously, I care a lot. So, but we need to... I think the problem is so many times when we've done this, we've been too wrapped up in whether or not the Texans are going to fire their head coach.
That's true.
We kind of lose track of it, yeah.
And neither of us had Reich last year, I can promise you that. There's no way that I thought Frank Reich was going to get fired first.
It takes a lot for me to project the first year getting fired, first year guy getting fired. I have a hard time doing it.
Yep, same. And yet, two of the four were first-year guys in Urban Meyer and Frank Reich. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Hey, let's circle back to the Astros. Verlander, a big topic right now. Would he start in a playoff series for this team? I don't think he deserves to. It is very interesting, though, who Astro fans in a landslide think should be starting as the third starter in this rotation come playoff time. We'll have that for you coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.